multitasking.
How do you keep your to-do list?
You have to train the brain to be efficient.
Like, you can't be on Facebook. You can't be on Instagram.
I'm not going to try to get three things done this hour. I'm going to try to get one thing done this hour. On today's episode of Corporate Homie.
Books that have influenced or helped our career. Nice girls don't get the corner office.
Rewarding A for hoping for B. Why should white guys have all the fun? Hey, homies.
Welcome back to the Corporate Homie Podcast.
Woo woo.
So today we are talking about books that have influenced or helped our careers. If you have been a homie for some time and you've been rolling with us, you know that we're always talking about books. We are both pretty avid readers.
I think that's something that is rare for 2018. A lot of people don't read books anymore. People read periodicals, they read blog posts, they follow people on Instagram, but they don't actually read books. But we're still readers of books, and we can thank who?
Carolyn Liggins for that. Yeah, our mom made us read books when we were growing up.
It's not just that she made us read books, she actually required book that we
reports.
Do book reports.
Reports.
And as I realized at 43, she hadn't actually read the books.
Why doesn't it matter
what we put in the book reports. But like we did like legit book reports in like July.
Especially in the summers. I was about to say, especially in the summers. But I will say this. My love of reading has helped me when I was playing ball on the bus. It helped me certainly in my career as a lawyer. There's a substantial amount of reading. And even now it's something that I very much look forward to. I'm actually about to go on vacation starting tomorrow.
And where you going, homie?
I am off to Cabo. And so, yes, I'm off to Cabo. And so I am very much looking
forward. For the homies that don't recognize that tune.
I'm very much looking forward to a couple of days in the sun, which for me means a little book reading, a little binge watching, a lot of tequila.
And I would just say, all jokes aside, in 2018, it doesn't matter what medium you're reading, but if you want to be a rock star homie, you have to read.
Like, yes.
There are no
shortcuts
that you got to read. You got to read something. Periodicals, blogs, industry information. I don't know any successful people that do not read.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think all successful people read, and I would dare say read books.
I would too, but I'm trying to not be 43 and understand that like sometimes reading can be outside of books.
Yeah, totally agree. And so if you've been rolling with us and you've been rocking with us, then you know that we are always referencing books. I'm not sure if you've been on the website, but we do have a tab that refers to many of the books that we refer to in the podcast. If we ever refer to a book that is not on the books tab, just shoot us a message. So we wanted to kind of just jump right into it. And I have five books. I don't know how many you have.
I have five books.
Oh, good. So we're going to talk about maybe 10 books, or assuming that none of them overlap, that have been influential or helpful in our career. So these are not fiction books. These are books that we've actually used to help promote and the trajectory or move forward in our careers.
To help us be rock star homies.
That's right.
So my first book is The Leadership Challenge. So The Leadership Challenge is an amazing book. It was actually released in 1987. I did not read it in 1987 because I was at McCormick Junior High School then. Cheyenne Frontier.
In Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Conestoga days. But I actually read the book in business school And the thing that really stuck out to me, there was an analogy that they use in the book about not using your putter on the golf course and only playing a round of golf with your putter. That basically different shots require different clubs, and that leadership was the same way. That there are times to be an autocratic leader, a democratic leader, a consensus builder, and that really stuck with me. So it's called The Leadership Challenge, and it's written by James Cozes and Barry Poser. So we'll put this on the website, but that's my first book. But the analogy that jumped out at me is the one I wanted to share with the homies tonight. And I use this analogy all the time. I use it in client meetings. I've used it on interviews because it really jumped out and stuck with me.
That is very interesting. I like that, that you need a different club for different things. You need a different leadership style for different situations. You need to be nimble, if you will. Okay, my first book, I probably have talked about this on previous podcasts because it's probably been the absolute most influential book in my career, and it's Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office by Lois Frankel. I love that book.
2000?
I read it 2000? Very early. No, probably not that early because I was already at the firm, maybe 2003, 2004. Somewhere between 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. But it really helped me rethink everything from how I introduced myself on the phone to where I sat in meetings.
To no longer having a candy dish on your desk.
Right. It just has all types of tips.
No, I thought the candy dish was what stuck out to me in the book. I thought that was really important.
Yeah, so I would say this. Don't let the fact that it says nice girls don't get the corner office, I think they would be tips that would be good for all the homies, especially people of color working in corporate America, because it really talks about sort of unwritten rules or unwritten playbook that you could work. Like you might want to tell the candy dish story that you can do that can help you get ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you if there was some analogy or example in the book that struck you, but what struck me in the book is they talk about women have candy dishes at their desk, and just by the virtue of having peppermint or Jolly Ranchers or whatever it is that you want to have at your desk, that you are basically making yourself beneath other people. And that seems like something that's being friendly and benign that is actually hurting your career. So I didn't know if there was something like that in the book.
Yeah, that's why I said the where to sit in the meetings was probably the first one, was that the power of any meeting is at the head of the table and the two people sitting to the side next of them. And so, you know, you can't get those seats if you're late. But for whatever reason, people assume that power jumps off of the people, you know, the most second and third most powerful
closest
people,
to them.
And so you got to get to a meeting early. You can't be the person always rolling in late if you want to sit in the power seats. Another tip I really got from that was how you introduce yourself, how you answer the phone, and that men tend to answer the phone with their first and last name, Demetra Liggins. And women tend to be like, hey, this is Demetra, which sort of sounds more like customer service.
Casual.
Mm-hmm, or a customer service rep, and that you should be using your first and last name as you pick up the phone.
I remember when I was reading the book, and I remember the first person that I personally deemed as powerful, and that was Harold Ford Sr., who was the congressman at the time.
Or a congressman, but see, we called him the congressman.
But he was the congressman in Memphis. And he was the very first person I remember that when he called you, the other person on the phone would say hello, and he would say, Harold Ford. And then he would get into whatever it is that he wanted. And I remember no one else I knew did that. And it wasn't until I read the book that I realized that that was a
power move,
a play of power. And it gets your attention. And even now, when Harold Ford calls me, I think he's going to ask me for something. I'm going to say no. And by the end of the conversation, I'm trying to figure out how to help him.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out how to help him. And I know, like, this dude's going to ask me for something. But he's like, Demetra, Harold Ford. I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, my goodness. It's Harold Ford. And so I love that about the first and last name.
Yeah.
My second book is, it's not actually a book. It's a Harvard business case that I read when I was in business school. And it's called On the Folly of Rewarding A While Hoping for B.
Oh.
And I think a lot of us do this in corporate America. Corporations do this. We do this as individuals. It's actually written by a gentleman by the name of Steve Kerr. Not the Golden State
Warriors. I'm about to say the former point guard for the Utah Jazz.
But they basically talk about, like, and it's funny because I watch people with children do this, and I think, oh, it's the folly of rewarding A or hoping for B. So I have friends who are, you guys can't see me, but I'm holding up air quotes. They're new age parents. So they scold their children, send them to timeout. And then after the kids get out of timeout, they like coddle them and hug them and pat them and pick them up.
But let me say, did I just say Steve Kerr played for the Jazz? Because he played.
I don't want to judge you. You sound real formalish.
For Chicago Bulls. I can't confuse him with the other. I can't confuse him with Karl Malone's point guard, John Stockton. My bad, homies. My bad.
And he's actually now the coach of the world champion Golden State Warriors.
Golden State. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. It's funny that he's like now thought of as a coach, but I still think of him as a player.
I think of him as a spot shooter, as a player as well. But anyway, On the Folly of Rewarding A for Hoping for B, the basis of it is to make sure that the reward that you're trying to seek is affirming the behavior that you're going after. And we all see a lot of this in corporate America. We see it in our personal relationships where people reward one thing when they're actually trying to get something different. And so I love this article on the folly of rewarding A while hoping for B. What's your next reading?
Okay, so this might be a little controversial, but my next book is Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg.
Why is that controversial?
Well, you know, a lot of women did not like the book, especially women of color. They felt like the book was written. For those of you who don't know, let me back up. Sheryl Sandberg is the COO of Facebook and wrote a book about being a woman and ascending to, you know,
the C-suite.
Right, the C-suite of a, you know, Fortune, you know, 5 or Fortune 10 company. And just all that she thought that it took. But she had controversial.
It's like when Beyonce says in the new Nice song on the Carters, I don't know any glass in it, ceiling, word to blue. I ain't never seen a ceiling in my whole life, that's word to blue. I love that.
Right. I'm making ways for my daughter.
Right, it's goodness.
Right, and so to me, a lot of the criticism was that the book was not written for people of color, certainly wasn't written for women of color. But I would say this, there are very few women in the C-suite. There's certainly only, my understanding is there were only 2 women of color who were CEOs, who are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies or Fortune 100, I'm not sure which one. That's Xerox and PepsiCo. And the PepsiCo CEO announced this week that she will be retiring. So anyway, I really enjoyed the book. I thought that Sheryl Sandberg really talked about some things that no one else had ever talked about how to make success. You know, some of the sacrifices that she made. She talked about, you know, needing to have help. She talked about the thing that really probably struck me more than anything is she talked about the importance of who you pick as a life mate can have a tremendous impact on the trajectory of your career. And I know that's something a lot of the homies don't want to talk about, but that's real out here.
It really is, because what happens is when people meet your significant other, even if it's just somebody that you think you're dating that's not significant, but when you choose to bring them to a work event, people start to think that this is a serious potential person, and then they make a determination about who you are based on who you're bringing around. So if you are
absolutely
the young female minority lawyer that's on the rise and you bring some good looking dude that's like, I'm trying to be a rapper at 36 years old, I'll just be the person to tell you everybody at your firm, everyone at your company is making fun of you.
Right. And that's fine. But it just who you pick.
I think almost speaks more about who you are than who you are.
It certainly speaks as much. Maybe not more, but it certainly speaks as much.
Right.
And that's for all of us. If you pick the dumpy girl that just co-signs on everything you say, nothing is more retreat cringy, cringeworthy than when you're around somebody's spouse and they clearly don't like them. And then there's something about their spouse,
yes,
that says that they don't play at this level. And then they're being condescending to their spouse. And all you think is you're trying to make yourself shine, but they're your spouse. And so you're actually telling on yourself.
Yep, I agree with that.
So my next book is, and I'll be a little transparent here. You know, when I was younger and I was, you know, thirsting for information and trying to learn to be somebody in these corporate streets, I would do things at the time that I thought was the right thing to do. And so there was this book out about this black guy named Reginald Lewis. And the book was called Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And I didn't know who Reginald Lewis was. This book came out in 1987. I was in seventh grade and basically working on my bougie black people-ishness. And we were living in Wyoming and I decided to read this book. And Reginald
Lewis... You read the book in seventh grade?
I read the book in seventh grade. So he was a Harvard law grad, and he was a corporate lawyer turned venture capitalist. And he made Black Enterprises, you know, top whatever net worth list for a company called Beatrice International at the time. Beatrice International had $400 million in net worth. So, like, we weren't wrong. I mean, it was 1987. $400 million in net worth is significant today. It most certainly was significant in 1987.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know. What I love about the book is, the reason why I say it's a book that changed my career, I didn't know what Wall Street was. I didn't know what a venture capitalist was. I didn't know the difference between Harvard Law School and Harvard Business School. I just knew, like, people who were super smart went to Harvard. And I didn't know if they got degrees in crayon biology or whatever. And that's not a real degree, obviously, crayon biology. But
right.
But the book was significant. And then he died an untimely death, and he died early. But just because he educated...
Yeah, didn't he die at like 50
52 years old. And so just learning the difference between Harvard Law and Harvard Business School and what Wall Street and venture capitalism, and corporate lawyer turned private equity... It was a book that changed my career because it introduced something to me called big business, high business, sophisticated business, private equity. And I didn't know what any of those things were. And I certainly didn't have anybody in my family right now that could pass a quiz that would tell you what that is. So it is a book that changed my career.
Wow. I don't even remember you reading that. That's so...
And it's because it was on the Black Enterprise. That's why magazines matter.
So how did you get, wait a minute, how did you get the book?
Because in Black...
Did you check it out at the library?
Yeah, I checked it out at the local library.
Where did we live? So in seventh grade, that was McCormick?
We lived in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And it was at the city library. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so interesting because you were reading... You know, Reginald Lewis and...
You read Man Child and Promised Land.
Man Child and the Promised Land, Claude Brown.
Man Child and the Promised Land.
But that's a great book
if you haven't read it.
And that book changed my life, but that's a whole nother
that's
episode.
A coming,
that
wasn't that's a about coming business. Of age book. Yeah.
Of age book. Yeah, for sure. And when you really think about it, a really heavy book too for a seventh grader.
Very much so. Dimitri was like, I'm going to an HBCU and read everything that was on my parents' HBCU reading list.
I did think I was, and then I ended up at Christian Brothers. I had it all wrong. Totally wrong. I knew it all along. What's that from?
Say it again, huh?
I knew it all along. You was totally wrong.
That is from Different World. Where Walt Jaleesa is Lisa.
Jaleesa is Jaleesa. Don't fool me. Don't fool
Come on,
me.
Sinbad.
Yeah. Get you a twin. Random things like scenes from a TV show. Okay.
TV dialogue.
My next book is The Empress Has No Clothes by Joyce Rocher. So I love this book. Mostly because I didn't know what the imposter syndrome was. Joyce Roche was in Houston. She was actually, I think, brought in to do some type of speech, and then did a speech for one, and then did a little small group or talk for one of my clients who's a Black woman. And we all went, and she was sort of talking about this book that she had written. And I had never heard of the imposter syndrome, did not understand it. For those of the homies who are like I was at the time, the imposter syndrome, which we have done an episode on the imposter syndrome, but it's basically about when you think you don't belong, when you think that, you know, you've worked really hard to get here, and yet you think somehow you are
somebody,
a fraud.
Somebody hasn't figured it out, and they're giving you something that you do not deserve.
Right. So you're like, I worked hard, and yet I think they're going to figure me out. And so she basically wrote a book about this syndrome, which really does affect, studies show, women and minorities at
higher
levels. It's basically no different than Sally Field when she wins the Oscar saying, "You like me. You really,
so,
really like me."
I went to this women's conference, and I know I talked about this on the imposter syndrome episode, but I think it's
episode 17.
It is. I think it bears repeating, but it talked about a woman who was doing an episode on a book on amazing women and all their accomplishments, and she had interviewed all these different women, West Point graduates, Olympic athletes, C-suite executives, astronauts, and they all had a common theme of how they thought they were successful, in that they were lucky. But when she interviewed men, they didn't think they were lucky. Like, they thought, like, hey, I deserve to be here.
And,
you know, the statistics say that a woman takes a job when she thinks she has 100% of the attributes to be good at that job. A man takes it when he thinks he has between 60 and 70%. So he is confident that he will grow into the other 30 to 40%. And so the old, you know, 1980s Vogue quote of, "I want every woman to have the confidence of a mediocre white guy," has actually not changed in 2018.
Wait, that's from Vogue?
That's from Vogue magazine.
I say that all the time. I had no idea where it
came from. Vogue magazine. All right, so my next book is a little bit cliche, but it has been incredibly helpful to my career, which is what this episode is about. Not just your favorite book, but the books that have been helpful to your career. And that is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I still do not check my email the first thing in the morning because of this book. I still,
me too,
whether I think I'm doing it or not, use the quadrants in terms of what's most important and what's least important. And when I find myself not being as efficient, coming to work, working for 12 hours, not feeling like I got anything effective done, not feeling like I got anything important done, it's because I'm not following the models of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So if you have not read Stephen Covey's book, if you think it's knucklehead, at least it's worth getting on the website, hitting the highlights, seeing what the 4 quadrants are, how to spend your time, and doing that.
I completely agree with that. That is a great book. It's sort of like back to the basics.
Blocking and tackling.
And to me, you know, the biggest probably lesson I got out of that book was you play offense on your day.
Instead of defense.
Right. Which takes me nicely into my book, my next
book.
Is
this your final
book? We talked about.
Is this your final book?
No. I'm not my final book. Which is my next book. I'm on 4, which we talked about in episode 18, the procrastination episode. Same thing when you find yourself in a rut, which is the 15 secrets successful people know about time management, the productivity habits of 7 billionaires, 13 Olympic athletes, 29 straight A students, and 239 entrepreneurs, Kevin Krause, because that's how I sort of learned to keep sort of, like you said, most important task of the day. Really started thinking about that there were 1,440 minutes in a day. Sort of that idea of, like, time is money, like you said, how do I get stuff done? How do I make the most out of a day? Especially homies, you know, we're at about to start the last quarter of the year. If you're feeling like you haven't gotten a lot done, it's not too late. You know, you can still get things done. Those two books, the Seven Habits of Effective People, the 15 Secrets of Secret Successful People Know About Time Management, are two books that can really, if you don't read anything else, it can help you sort of how to manage your day to day.
I couldn't agree more. The most important task of the day has changed my life, because even if I don't get anything else done, because as I mentioned in the procrastination episode, I will add things that I've already done to my to-do list, strike them off, and make myself feel good and not gotten anything meaningful done. So having the most important task of the day that says to me, it does not matter if you get 22 frivolous things done. This is what we got up this morning to do, and we didn't do that and we failed. Or we did and we only got two things done, but we got one very important thing done. And so that has been so helpful to my career. My last book is not a book. So I had two of my five that were actually not books. And so in 1997.
So you don't know how to follow directions.
The year, I'm just not type A. I'm doing my own thing. One of these kids is doing their own
thing. Kids is doing his own thing.
I discovered a gentleman with a Christian focus on finance by the name of Dave Ramsey. And he started doing these workshops called Financial Peace. And not P-I-E-C-E, but P-E-A-C-E. And Dave Ramsey really changed my financial life. Before, you know, I just graduated from college. Even though people had talked to me about the value of having good credit, I hadn't bought into that. And he taught me how to get out of debt, with debt snowball. He talked about being with his family,
which we're going to talk about in our episode on how to start your savings.
So he
account.
Talked about
that's one of our next episodes.
You know, 401ks, and he said with his family, with his kids, he actually offered them 401 Dave, which I realized my dad offered 401 Benny. That when you want to do certain things, he would match whatever you've raised. And so Financial Peace was a book, a workshop that has had a tremendous effect on my career before I even thought about what an MBA was or going to business school, and helping me get my financial life in order.
That's interesting. So that's because mine is, I know that I never read that book, but I know that that book has had a tremendous impact on my life, because you had your Financial Peace long before I had mine. I know I have, you know, came to you kind of early in my career to sort of get financial peace, to figure out what I was going to do, which is why I'm excited to share on one of our upcoming episodes about how to start a savings account. I think you were really influential in that. I think you've been very influential to a lot of our friends and family about that. So it's very interesting now to see that what you do for a living is, you know, private banking, because you were, I mean, you won't bank me, but you know what I mean? You can help other people really figure that piece out and sort of get behind their finances and start taking it, you know, one bite at a time.
Right. What's your final book?
My final book is Bringing in the Rain by Sarah Holtz. And so, unfortunately, homies, this is a book mostly geared towards women. I mean, mostly good towards lawyers. And it was about sort of developing your book, business development tips. Very helpful. I ended up, after reading the book, going to Sarah's
Women's Rainmaker Roundtable.
Yep, Roundtable. She now has her podcast, her own podcast, called Advice to My Younger Self, which I'm a big fan of. But Sarah was the first person, or that book was the first thing that I ever read or had heard where someone was given business development tips, and they were actual
practical tips.
Practical tips. Instead of just giving you the topic
sentence. Or as I like to call it, excuse my language, bullshit bingo. Synergy.
Yeah.
Partnership. And
Relationship.
We're going to brainstorm. Green light. You're like, what does
right.
all of that
what
mean?
Does that mean? Yeah. What's your last book?
No, I already gave my Dave Ramsey was my fifth book.
Okay, so I have a bonus book.
probably gonna surprise homies, but it's a book that I refer to. I like to refer to it every day, but I definitely try to get into it 2 or 3 times a week.
The Bible.
The Bible. Come on, somebody.
The B-I-B-L-E.
Right. And do not let me fool you. I have a Bible on my desk. I have always kept a Bible in you my see, office.
We're always rolling with Jesus.
Always.
Because when in doubt,
always.
I'm gonna share this with the homies. It is the very best advice, professionally, personally, spiritually, physically, that I've ever been given. And it was given by my paternal grandmother, Lovie Smith. May she rest in peace. She said, whenever your
better known as Big Mama.
She says, whenever your life is in turmoil, read Proverbs.
Read Proverbs.
She said,
read Proverbs.
Every day, start with the first chapter of Proverbs and read that every day, and your life will be better. And at the time, I'm like, that I don't, Proverbs what? She was like, just Proverbs. Just read Proverbs. And if you're not a Christian, and you don't have to be a Christian, you can be Jewish, agnostic, whatever. Proverbs is about wisdom. The whole book is about wisdom. Right. And it's just genius, right? Just when your life is in shambles, when you're feeling sad, read Proverbs.
And if you don't know anywhere else to go, you know, Daddy always says, you know, you just go to Proverbs 3:5-6. You trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not to thine own understanding. And I have needed that in my career. And we're being a little tongue in cheek, but I'm dead serious. There is nothing that has been more comforting to me than the Word of God, than to be led by the Holy Spirit instead of my feelings, to not get caught up in what's happening at work. I have definitely, my Bible at work, I probably should be ashamed to say, is the most tethered Bible that I have. It is probably the one that has been the most used, just because stuff be breaking off in a law firm. I be needing the Word.
But I think that's the genius of Proverbs, is like when you're not exactly sure what it is you need, it kind of brings those things to light. And corporate America has so many twists and turns, and people don't tell you the truth. And people that you think are going to tell you the truth, like your leadership and people that you need to trust in. And the Proverbs is everything.
Yeah, so that's my last tip. Like we said, listen, homies, if you're not reading, really encourage you to read. I looked up a statistic and it said that most CEOs read 60 books a year. I don't know how many books I read a year. I don't think it's anywhere near 60. But just try to get in the habit. If you haven't read a book, just try to read a book by the end of the year. Pick something and start reading it. Like Bimitra said, it doesn't have to be a book. Maybe it's a periodical. Maybe you're going to start reading the Wall Street Journal. Maybe you're going to read an industry magazine. But you cannot be a rock star, homie, if you're relying on quotes on social media and your own intellect and your own wisdom to guide you through your career.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. And as I like to tell people that work for me, it doesn't matter what your opinion is. It matters that you have an opinion, and you can't have an opinion if you're not well-read. So,
and you know, I think it's a good way to get sort of advice and mentors from people that you would never meet. You know, if you read Condoleezza's book or a book by Oprah,
Donna Brazile, coach, or even, you know, Beyonce or whoever, like that, because
yes, being successful, absolutely,
the attributes are very much the same. So, as always, we appreciate the homies listening. We thank you for your support. You can find us on all things social media. We're always at Corporate Homie, HOMIE. And that's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc.
And if you want to have a topic covered, please feel free to shoot us an email at info@corporatehomie.com. You can use that same email address if you're interested
and having us come out and speak to your organization. And then if you just have like a question, you can send that to questions@corporatehomie.com. And so thanks again for listening. And if you read any of these books and they're helpful, or if you dislike them and you hate them, let us know. Reach out. Tell us how you feel about the books. And until next time.
Hustle hard, homies.
All of you, get you a twin. Get you another homie.